Welcome to the Amazon Legends Podcast, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became powerful sellers, also experts specializing in helping sellers, and both former and current Amazon employees who will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here's your host, Nick Urisin.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today is a seasoned retail professional turned entrepreneur and inventor. And he's the founder and CEO of Killer Concepts and Rocksteady Corporation, proud father of two daughters. So everybody, meet my guest, Jeff Liebman. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, Nick. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. So we're going to learn a lot from you today because you figured out a simple but effective way to increase your sales. It's so obvious, and Amazon actually rewards you for it, but people don't know. So tell us what that is.
Well, in short, it's really making 2 and 2 equals 22.
Well, that, you know, I heard 2 plus 2 makes 5 with the right partnership, but 22... Give us your version of it. How does that work?
You know, we're in the business of building a brand, and our products are, it's about driving traffic to our site. So getting the customer to the site is the heavy lifting. Once we're there, we're really trying to convert them. And by doing so, we're giving them multiple options. So a single landing page will have multiple ASINs, bundles that make sense, bundles that have value together, are priced together, and we can bring the traffic to the page and really try to find the right solution for them. So fundamentally, the answer is get multiple ASINs on a page, owning that page, and then driving traffic to the page and curating it to work together.
Yeah, so this is actually something that Amazon likes very much because when you are doing the bundling, so a lot of people have this misconception about multiple items. So I tell them, you know, why don't you create bundles or have more than one SKU? Don't just have one SKU. So essentially, what you're doing is you're creating a parent ASIN, right? A parent SKU, which really is not a SKU. It cannot be bought and sold. It's the child SKUs under it, or as Amazon calls, variations. And you can create them any way you want. That people think that that means that you need to have different SKUs. You really don't. So you can take one of this and one of this and one of the other and create a bundle, or you can have a 3-pack, a 6-pack. That's what you are referring to, right? By having 2 plus 2, 22.
Yeah, there's a few ways. So obviously you can create bundles and create single SKUs for a bundle, and that becomes its own ASIN. That's one model. But we are creating separate ASINs in the child-parent relationship, as you described, which can be, you know, working with Amazon, sometimes that could be a process, setting them up. There's another layer and new process to learn. And you can't go willy-nilly. In other words, you can't have two products that have nothing to do with each other within a bundle. So strategically building value and building more options that make sense at that time, that's totally aligned with what Amazon's trying to achieve and what we're trying to achieve, which is really to drive engagement on our page and so that we can improve our key metrics. So, you know, our TACOs for total advertised spend for total revenue. So as we're driving to one campaign, it may support us on a separate SKU. So it's a one layer deeper where we're really seeing what's our total holistic return that we're getting on ad spend.
Yeah. You know, there is another, not so much trick, but it's the natural outcome, really. You can't really help the situation. But if you did this the right way, right from the get-go, you create a parent SKU, and then you have the child SKUs under it. What happens is, if this was a single SKU, you would start to receive ratings, right? So, and then you introduce another SKU, then that SKU, you know, being a single ASIN, you would have to collect ratings again. But if you have a parent, any child SKU you introduce, now I see you smiling, it inherits the reviews already collected, you know, by all the ASINs. So anybody who lands on that page, they are looking at the total number of ratings or reviews on the product, right? Do you ever take advantage of that?
Well, take advantage of is maybe, you know, there's a double-edged sword to the Amazon rating system. And as much as we love them, they, you know, it's always a process. But having an established product with lots of reviews helps you to launch new products. And certainly consolidating reviews across multiple items onto a single page is very exciting. For us, you know, our product is the Rocksteady Stadium speakers. So we invented a new line of Bluetooth speakers that are infinitely connectable. We worked about a year and a half to develop that product and those sales and develop the ratings behind them, behind a one pack, a two pack, and a four pack, and then you can add more. And then this year, actually not this year, this week, we're finally launching a true add-on, a little advertisement here, the world's first, well, I'm holding up a blurry thing, world's first wireless portable subwoofer. So now you can connect this wireless portable subwoofer to these other speakers. So now we're building new bundles that go deeper. Not, now it's just Rocksteady Stadium speakers and then speakers and subwoofers. And so to launch a new product like the subwoofer on a page that's got a pre-existing series of reviews is a huge advantage to get something off the ground.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see that. So, yeah, I mean, this totally is alongside Amazon's, you know, favorite things to create bundles by creating value rather than buy them one by one. When you put it together, you bundle it, it's a better price. It ups your average order value. In addition, it increases your conversion because it's much better to have multiple options on one page when you are already there. What comes up in the search results is just one item. But when you land, you've got multiple, it's much better for your advertising, there's no end to it. So this is definitely the right formula. So did you discover that all by yourself or somebody gave you the idea?
Well, I would say we kind of looked to see, can we do this? So we found it on our own, I guess, from that standpoint. It wasn't a deep dive to figure out that it can be done. As consumers, we see you can buy, with some packaged products. I'd seen us as a consumer, but how to achieve it and make sure we're compliant was the next step. What's really cool is the fulfillment side. If you're doing bundles, you can create hard bundles and you can send them into Amazon for fulfillment, or you can do soft bundles where you're fulfilling it on your own. So when bundles become either very expensive or very large, or maybe you don't have the right packaging for it, you can start with fulfilled by merchant and still be able to create a soft bundle until you move to the right volumes where it justifies creating a hard bundle for that item.
Yeah. So for the listeners' benefit, when you create a variation by making up a bundle or a pack, you have to issue a separate UPC for it, right?
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
The bundle will need a UPC code.
Yeah, and also, you know, I'm all often asked, so they say that, for example, if you sell the individual items on its own as singles, that's also possible, but then they have their own UPC. But when you're shipping to Amazon Fulfillment Facility, they may be packed in cases of 24. So they say, okay, what do we do? What do we put on the outside of the 24-piece case as UPC? Because we only send full cases. And then what do we put on the outside of the case of the two packs, for example? So I always tell them, same single UPC goes on the outside of the case of 24, and the unique UPC for the two pack goes on the outside of the case for the two packs, and then the Amazon will break up the cases and fulfill orders individually, but you cannot ask Amazon to break up the two-pack to fulfill the orders for the singles, right? So it can get complicated a little bit if you are just making this up, right?
It can. So you'll want to create hard bundles if you're going to run them through Amazon Prime. I'm not certain that's been our experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I always tell people, first of all, just stay away from FBM, where you're doing your own fulfillment as much as possible. If you want to experiment with bundles, by all means, just, you know, for a short period of time, just to get a sense of how many is selling, and then just create the pre-process all the bundles and send them to FBA. It's just not worth, you know, one by one, you know, take a hit on the ratings, delivery, you know, it's just too much hassle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So let's talk a little bit about the success. So obviously you focused on how that page is performing. So what are you watching on that page in terms of measuring the success of your listing?
You know, so I'll get to your answer a little bit of a circular way. We do have a partner for that. You know, we didn't wake up understanding how Amazon worked, and we felt the more we can surround ourselves with smart people and people with experience, the better we can be. So, you know, I really have a retail background, brick and mortar. And as we were looking to launch our product, Rocksteady, again, it was originally the viewpoint of how do we, you know, of a retail brick and mortar launch. Then the pandemic hit, and we had to really transition the company and figure out how do we become an Amazon specialist and really a direct-to-consumer specialist. How do we attract customers one at a time instead of retailers? And, you know, we struggled at first. We were obviously, we started off looking at ROAS. We started looking at, you know, which keywords were working. We were playing with different budgets. We didn't have the experience to understand the speed at which we should expect to see change. So it's hard to tell whether something's working or not unless you've got that knowledge and experience. So I don't know if I should, you know, we hired a company called Seller Labs. We found that they've got some really strong tools. And then if you want their help to help manage and create the campaigns, they do that too. And so while they're reporting back to me a lot of ROAS and the typical key analytics that you'll find supplied to them, the one that we've really looked at, as I mentioned earlier, was Taka's. So that takes into consideration all of our marketing, whether we're doing it on Amazon or off Amazon. But we're really seeing is as a channel, just like we would handle it if it was brick and mortar as a customer, what is the return on, you know, there might be untracked sales or customers coming from other directions where those ads either landed or didn't, but the total investment still makes sense. And so we're really managing more to a total returns.
Yeah. So the metric that I heard you mention is TACOS, like the total advertising. So that means that you spend $100 in advertising and you generated $300 in advertised clicks, paid clicks, but altogether $1,000 with the organic traffic.
Exactly.
And what matters is $100 paid versus $1,000 generated in total. So that's the bottom line in the end, right? That's how it is.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah. So what is, share with us some of the numbers that you are achieving without giving us anything confidential, but what kind of, and how it progressed. So at the beginning, where you started and what you are able to achieve now.
Sure. So, again, starting a brand out of nothing and trying to get a premium value and price, it's like moving a heavy mountain. So, you know, originally the goal with ROAS was, hey, step one, we wanted to try to get to a 3x ROAS. As that ROAS was hit and achieved and got to 4, then 5, we moved focus more on tacos. And that was raising up from 9, 10, and 11. As the numbers got too high is when we really started increasing our budget. Want to bring that number down a little bit to see where you've got this the law of diminishing returns, right? But you don't want to leave opportunity on the table. So as a goal, you know, then we ran out of inventory. So that's a different story. We've been out of inventory for 45 days, and now we're starting again. We just today started up the campaign again, get the wheels going, get our rankings back up, get our page up. So we're going to relive our lessons we learned. So really the first goal was to try to get about a 3x ROAS and bring that up to 5 or 6. And as a tacos, our goal is to get it back up to 9 to 11, and then starts. And then as our inventory issues resolve, we have more inventory in transit that we hope arrives in time. Then we can really start scaling our advertising and really push that number. And we don't want to push that number up. We'll want to be pushing it down. You know, I'll be very happy with probably an 8 tacos would be a nice place to be. And then when we're at 8, we'll reevaluate. It's really about driving growth and market share at this point for our company as we build our brand.
So you introduce another fact. So let me understand. So on your ROAS, that means advertising spend versus the sales generated from advertising. So that's about 30%. Is that the case?
Well, great question. So you gave the example earlier. If we were to spend $100, 3x ROAS would suggest that we want to see $300 of sales off of a $100 ad spend. That's an expensive proposition because you still have product costs, fulfillment costs, all those things, but it's your first real KPI or key indicator that you want to object to. The goal with advertising is you want to see if you can get a message that resonates to the right audience and then see if you can scale it. It's like putting gasoline on a fire, right? Okay, now we've got something that works. It's getting a good conversion rate. So the page is converting, the right eyeballs are getting onto it, and they're being brought there with maybe the right purchase intent. And so if we can reliably get a return on that ad spend, and so instead of looking at spend $100 to get $300 of sales, and again, that's the way it's being reported. That's a click-through. I see the ad, I click the ad, I buy the product, or I come back a little bit later with the same login and buy it. That's calculated in your ROAS. But then if I come back a week later, or I come back from a different computer, or if I come as a result of it moved up the ranking page, or I found it on a Facebook ad, that, and I still buy it on Amazon, well, we want to count you too. And that's where we talk about tacos, which is the total ad spend against the total revenue. And so it's a healthier number to look at because it gives you the ability to, frankly, it gives you the ability to invest a little bit more because you have your eyes, your eyeballs are really on the big picture. Because if you're sub 3x ROAS, or if your margin doesn't support that type of spend, then really you're spinning your wheels, and you have to find that balance point where you're able to support that and support your company.
Yeah. So, and the takeoff ratio is, you mentioned 9 to 10. So that means for $100 ad spend, you have a total of $900 or $1,000 in sales.
If we were having a 10x row tacos, $100 ad spend, $1,000.
That's a very good number, by the way. I mean, that's a great number.
So
So the reality, the other reality, unfortunately, is when you increase the ad spend, it doesn't just reflect directly to your tacos, right? At some point in time, it starts to plateau. So, so at that point, you need to find other ways to bring more traffic.
Well, you have to continuously monitor and update your keywords for sure. As certain keywords are no longer performing, you want to have other ones as well. And you can certainly look at what is working for other companies and try to jump onto other rising stars. So there's a lot of that going on. So you have to manage that process, and you have to enjoy that. It's the only way to do something well. And I can honestly say I don't. So unfortunately, I know enough to be dangerous and to find people that do really understand that and enjoy optimizing that. But ultimately, you got to stay fresh. You got to stay innovative, and you have to make a good product. You know, and that's not always easy. You know, despite there's always, especially your product is determined by performance and by some of the reviews. And some people, the review process, you know, it's wonderful, double-edged sword. Sometimes the reviews are just unfair and they're mean. Yeah. And their voice can be loud. And it's typically the people who are motivated to write a review. With that said, I'm not complaining. We're happy and we've got a great product, and we believe. that our 4X, 4-star plus rating reflects that. But it's as an owner, as an inventor, it could be heartbreaking. You take it personally.
It's all, of course. You know, people say, you know, this is another thing. They say, you know, you are having a conversation about what you do and your particular specialty, and you get upset. And then when you start defending it, they say, why are you taking it personally? It's only business. Well, you know, there is no, in my book, this, at least this is my philosophy, there is no such thing as business is different than personal. Business is personal. Yeah. Whatever you have personally as your attitude, your knowledge, your experience, everything translates into business. How can you ever separate business and personal? One doesn't exist without the other, right? Everything is personal.
And more so today, and we're such a connected world, there's not a moment a day that I don't have access to my email, to feedback, to everything.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, if anybody says, if you're doing business with anybody and they say, hey, bud, it's not personal, it's business, my advice to you is to run.
You know, I heard a great quote a long time ago. How do you identify a criticism that is designed to insult? And that's exactly what it is. When you hear it, it's designed to insult, right? That's how they are saying it. Then it's not a criticism anymore.
You know, whenever anybody's willing to tell me anything and waste their breath, if it's feedback or criticism, there's value in that. I want to hear it. So in many ways, I want to say thank you. Emotionally, we react to tonality, choice of words, motive, and all of the above, which makes it personal as well. So emotion breeds emotion. And we, you know, as leaders, you know, we have to rise above that. We have to see the strength of what's in there. We hope that some people recognize, you know, the impact, especially in a public environment where they're all sitting up, you know, feel that they have to have a conversation. And, you know, the impact of people's words, you know, one word is just as loud as another and one voice. So, but yeah, you know, ultimately I say thank you. Anytime someone willing to tell me what I'm doing wrong, allow me to get on the right course and thank you.
Yeah. So do you take advantage of any of the programs that Amazon offers for brand registered sellers?
We have, and we do, and we're grateful to it, like all Amazon programs. And I'm not complaining. Amazon is a big company. And there's so many, everything's an exception. So I get it. You know, we started our company, we launched this product under the brand registry program. And then we split our company into two. We moved Rocksteady into its own corporation and therefore its own seller account. And so we registered Rocksteady with the new company. And now because the product is registered with Rocksteady, a company I own, and Killer Concepts, a company I own, whenever we try to make changes to our page, we can't because the brand registry team on this side says, no, they own the brand. So we go to this side and we try to make it, no, they own the brand. So we literally have been spent, maybe there's an Amazon listener who can help us, but we spent over a year trying to make improvements to our Amazon page and little modifications. And every time we think we take a step forward, a step back, and we've hired consultants, it's tricky. But the concept of the program, you know, is wonderful. Because I remember Amazon before brand registry with some of our other brands, especially under Killer Concepts. And we were getting products copied, which is a great flattery, but we were getting a lot of products copied and a lot of issues that I think that Amazon stepped up and at least put together a program that tries to address the issue of piracy or copyright and trademark infringement.
Yeah. So there are some programs that were introduced like in the last 6 to 8 months, maybe a year, some of them, that are designed to do a lot more than what they are offering to other sellers, as long as you are a brand registered seller. Like, for example, one of them, one of my favorites is Amazon Attribution. Are you familiar with Amazon Attribution?
I'm not, but I want to be.
So Amazon Attribution is designed to identify where your external traffic is coming from, because you may put ads on Facebook, you may advertise on, you know, any other website, Google, you name it. So this is external traffic. So as an advertiser, you want to know if you brought 1,000 clicks, 300 of them came from your Amazon sponsored ads, 500 of them from organic searches. You want to know the other 200, where that came from, and then how that breaks down. So this was not possible until Amazon Attribution was introduced. So there is a special way to generate the links for the ads, and then Amazon system will track and give you. In addition, to make this better and incentivize sellers to bring more external traffic to Amazon, which means more buyers, at this point, everybody knows Amazon, but let's face it, the more traffic you get, the more business you are likely to get. So rather than just offer advertising on Amazon, which is only going to people who are already on Amazon, they said, we want sellers to have the incentive to bring people from outside Amazon. So there is a program that works for sellers who use Amazon Attribution. And that program is called Brand Referral Bonus Program. What that means is, if as a brand registered seller, you use Amazon Attribution and you advertise outside Amazon, you bring business and you generate, say, $1,000 worth of sales by bringing people from outside Amazon. They give you back 10% of that sale as a rebate. It's money back in your pocket, a percentage of your sales. Now, the percentage varies based on category, as well as your order value and things like that. But if you study the program, you'll see generally it's around 10%. Unless you're selling like real low ticket items, like $2, $3 items. And of course, those are not worth selling, $2, $3 items. So it's called Brand Referral Bonus Program. And that's a great program. Another feature that I like very much, since I'm always into metrics and data, and that is the search query report, where brand registered sellers can see what search terms are resulting in what click-through rate. So that's a huge deal, because now you know what is getting you the good results in searches. So you can focus on those search terms. And if it's not part of your keyword strategy, you include it in your strategy. If it is, then you know that these are coming through organically anyway, and that maybe beef it up with, sponsored. So, and I mean, what I'm mentioning to you is that these are just my favorite ones.
Yeah.
But there are others. I actually had a previous guest who was a former Amazonian. She shared with me some crazy tips, and that episode will come out a few months from now. And so it's unbelievable. Like, there is a brand feed that you can create posts. They get circulated. And Amazon Live is another one to demonstrate your product. I mean, they are really getting behind brands to be able to promote. So you really need to stay on top of what's available and how you can incorporate.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah, I can go on forever. So let's talk a little bit about your decision-making process. So you said that earlier, also you have on sell through your website, right?
Yeah, so we just launched our new website also today. So we have a Shopify-based website. I think our latest iterations, our best one yet. I've built so many websites, and I hate them always within a minute of them launching. This one, hopefully we learned a few lessons. But we're starting to dip our toes in non Amazon advertising now. With the intent to drive our own traffic on our own site, and also, you know, happily drive traffic to Amazon. So I'm definitely going to look into that brand referral program. That sounds fantastic.
Oh yeah.
But this is a whole new you've got a lot more flexibility and challenges with respect to creating content. You know, the Amazon system is so simple, you know, because you're really promoting an item and it's an equal playing field. Now you really have to push the boundaries of creativity, drive messaging. So it's another investment. It all kind of works towards the same goal, which is really developing an ability to communicate directly with the customer and then market to them. And that's one of the things we wish we can do more on Amazon. For instance, we've sold all these speakers and now we've launched an add-on, a subwoofer. It'd be great if we could go back and retarget those customers. And it's easier to do that outside when you control the ad spend through off the site. So we're hoping that we could find that opportunity or that ability to do that on Amazon as well. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, as far as retargeting the previous buyers?
Yeah. With an add-on, go ahead.
No, I'm not. So tell us about it.
Well, the answer is we don't know if we can. You know, everybody who bought our speakers, their experience by adding one of our subwoofers elevates it to in a way that's hard for me to explain. It's just adding a subwoofer to a portable Bluetooth speaker. You know, we're the world's first wireless portable subwoofer, which is pretty exciting. We're not only the first, we're the only. And the experience of adding bass to a speaker, especially one like ours, you know, we have a high fidelity speaker, so it's got a dedicated tweeter, mid bass driver, and bass drums, and the sound is great, as good if not better than any Bluetooth speaker I believe on the market. Adding multiple speakers allows you to really expand the space and improve upon the space. You can make one a left channel, one a right channel. And you can mix and match and switch them on the fly. Adding a subwoofer, dropping it anywhere, the bass becomes non-directional, meaning one subwoofer can support a large area where you may have several speakers. But adding a subwoofer just brings this warmth up from the bottom of the room. And all of a sudden, it doesn't sound like a portable Bluetooth speaker system anymore. You've now got a system that sounds better than probably most wired systems. And certainly better than people, you know, you can pack them up, take them to the park, use them in your house, in your backyard, front yard, anywhere you go. So that's the category we're building. It's called the portable sound system. So that's really, you know, this week is the launch week, which is exciting.
Well, it is. So as far as your start on Amazon, so was that after you launch your website, or was it at
the We built them at the same time. They both launched the same time. And then we sat back and we said, okay, now how do we make these work? Our first focus was Amazon. There's a trust factor there. There's an established process there. It was more understandable. So we focused first on really making sure we had a good page with good A-plus content. We've got to update that now that we've launched into subs. So that's the next challenge where we talked about, I can't change the page because of the brand registry, but we're working towards that. Yeah. And then we started to dabble on our own, buying keywords, trying the different type of ads until we found what worked. And so we really spent the first year focusing all of our marketing on Amazon. And it's only now that we're looking at outside of Amazon to be an add-on experience to that. But Amazon still, that's the core of our planned growth, both domestically, and now Amazon's offering some new services. Fulfilled, you'll be able to use your same inventory to fill orders in Canada and Mexico starting soon, and that's a very exciting new solution. As we look to expand into Europe, it's very the path to launch on Amazon Europe and Amazon Australia is so much simpler to follow Amazon and believing in their ability to grow in those markets. I think we all feel strongly that they've got the knowledge, willpower, and capital to do that. So we think, you know, partnering with Amazon's really strategic for us for short term, medium term, and long term, but certainly broadening our customer outside of Amazon has to be a focus as well.
So since this is fairly fresh for you, share with us some of your experiences in terms of launching on Amazon. How much time did it take for you to stop investing? Because, you know, you have to invest at the beginning. You have to invest money. You have to invest your time. And still, it takes time. So how much time does one need to invest and how much they have to allow themselves before they say, okay, this is now running. I know what to do. I'm not going to panic every time something happens. And at the same time, this is how much I'm getting. I'm generating every week, every month, whatever. So give us some sense of it.
I think it certainly is dependent upon the product. And so I'll give you kind of what's happened with us. And it was, there were some critical milestones that occurred where you didn't panic. And so a lot of it starts with having different goals, right? So maybe at first you're measuring page traffic, or at first you're measuring, and you just want to be able to see that there's some metric is trending in the right direction early on. Anything can hold on to say that, hey, I'm out here, right? Page views, okay, but I'm not converting. Work on maybe some price offers or work on improving your messaging, improving your bullet points or your videos and different type of content. Or are you targeting the right demographic? For us, I would say once we got to 100 reviews, that was a milestone. And that felt like a little bit of momentum or wind in our sails at that point. We could get people to our page with more reliability. Once we had, we did start to do some press, some PR campaigns as well. So once we had some reviews, some web search support. So for us, it was probably, it took us a good 6 months before we really felt we had our hands on the reins, that we knew, okay, now we can start experimenting. We can start growing our budget. We can start taking more risk or taking more chances.
So as far as the 100 review milestone, what is the ratio roughly that you get? You know, how many orders does it take for you to get one review? It's a tough number to nail down, and it changes. It varies for people.
It's not as high as we'd like it to be. I'd say it's in the single digits, under 10%, probably closer to 5%. And you don't know when they're coming, and you certainly would love to be able to respond to some of them. And that's been taken away. And I understand some of the reasoning behind that. But hopefully that whole process will continue to evolve.
I mean, reviews are big for Amazon. So you've heard, I mean, as we record this in July, end of July, a couple of weeks ago, we had a, I remember seeing this news that Amazon sued a bunch of Facebook group administrators. These Facebook groups were about collecting reviews. So they sued the admins. They went after the admins. And of course, they removed the reviews. So they're making a big deal. So they want the reviews to be authentic. So
it's arguably, one of their biggest competitive advantages amongst all the other things that they're doing from a supply chain and systems standpoint. And we've been marketed to by a lot of people who offer to help with those type of things. And we've stayed away from that, mostly for a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons also is you just know eventually you'll get caught. And then, you know, what do you do with your business? You know, you know, it's better to do it the hard way. The hard way often pays off. And that'd be my recommendation, is there's very few shortcuts.
Yeah. So you talked about some of the metrics. So share with us some metrics that you monitor as far as the performance of the listing.
When we look at page traffic, that's one of the top ones. Are we getting eyeballs on there? We measure that. And as we're getting those eyeballs, we then measure conversion rates. So of those eyeballs, who's converting? And that tells us whether our message is right to the right demographic or if our message is right at all.
How do you track that? Because that's something that is only available through their business reports. You have to download and you have to, plus you need to look at it in perspective, right? You can't just look at it once and then that's it. You have to be comparing. So share with us some of the best practices you have.
Well, so that's where third-party tools come in, and I mentioned earlier, and I'm not trying to be an advertiser for them, but Seller Labs offers some good analytic tools that allow you to help yourself, and you can create some custom tools in there as well, and then you can go further, which we've done, which is also get their help to optimize our ads. And that could be on a short-term or a longer-term basis. So I don't really have a great answer for you in terms of what those analytics are. These are more the questions I ask when we do our bi-weekly calls, and then I get some email reporting. And as I look at those reports, those are the key things I'm looking at, is I'm looking for trends in the right direction. Are we getting eyeballs? Are we converting those eyeballs? And our sales increasing? And then what's our spend against ourselves? And so more as an executive level, that's what I'm looking at. But the people who are on it from a moment-to-moment standpoint, they're probably looking at the responsiveness of each individual keyword and also the relative cost of that keyword to its effectiveness.
And what is a good conversion rate that you look for on the page?
That's a great question. You know, we like to see it in the 15 to 20% range, but it also depends how you measure it. There's some lack of tracking that takes place. So we get there through a few assumptions. That's what we'd like to see. That's what we're working towards. And since we've been out of stock these last 45 days, we're really restarting everything from zero. So our goal right now is just to see transactions and then build up our reviews again. We feel our subwoofer is a game changer. And so it should elicit some strong reviews as well. It's so dynamically different than what's on the market.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I ask you about conversion is I have this philosophy that there are two magic bullets to be successful on Amazon. One is always work on increasing the click-through rate, your CTR, on the keywords. Of course, in order to do that, you need to know what your CTRs are for what keywords. So first, create awareness around it, and then steadily and deliberately work on increasing the CTR. It's very simple. CTR means that somebody does a search, your listing comes up, and 100 people click on it. How do you make that 100? 200, 150. That's what increasing CTR looks like. So that then it rolls into the second magic bullet, which is to increase the conversion rate. So out of the 200, what used to be 100, now 200, if you are getting 15% and you make that 20%, then obviously, so out of 200, 15% is 30 orders, right?
Sure.
You make it 20%, that's 40 orders.
Yeah.
So it just goes exponentially from that point. So those are the things. And of course, the next thing is you need to be on top of it all the time, not through a bunch of calculations, because by the time you run the calculations, it's already outdated. So, and you need to be looking at it in perspective. So historically, so in other words, don't just look at it today. Look at it today, last week, last month, last year, this time. So look at it in conjunction with the events, because you may have just started an advertising campaign, and then, of course, that's going to make an effect. So all those things. So, and of course, this becomes a very complex operation. And I'm not aware of anything that reports everything together in a way that I would like to see myself. So, but these are the things. So if you get those two magic bullets constantly traveling faster and more accurately, you're going to get much, much better results. So I want to ask you also, my favorite question. Describe a team that makes you successful at Amazon in terms of roles and responsibilities. What, as a seller, what should you recognize and say, okay, somebody has to be doing this? Describe to us what a team looks like and what are good roles to outsource?
Great question. Yeah, there's a lot involved in managing Amazon. So first you've got, obviously, logistics. Even if you're using FBA, you've got to keep the right level of inventory there. You've got to keep your supply chain set, and you have to be compliant to make sure it's going through their warehouses quickly. While you're doing that, you should be monitoring how quickly they're able to receive, check seasonality, so you can really plan, make sure you don't have your out of stocks. Then you've got kind of the more strategic side. So I would say more of the product and marketing side. You know, when is Prime Day? Have that on your calendar. When do I have to plan for that? What is my marketing plan throughout the year? Not just in terms of ad spend, but also pricing and promotions. So on a marketing side, you want to have kind of a brand manager that is going to be responsible for that. That person will be massaging the product page, improving the messaging, and updating images, and just working on creating more short videos that you can use in advertising, and paying attention to all the different opportunities Amazon emails you about for running this event or that event. If you're you've got to be able to respond and react to those. And so that's one person. Logistics. Now, logistics would be a person that shares skills or responsibilities across the company. And then on the analytics side, we see that as its own role. A lot of times people consolidate their marketing and their keyword advertising or Amazon marketing as one person. And it's really two different types of people. And if you can divide that, you can. And as I mentioned, that part we split out of the company. So the analytics side, optimizing our advertising, keep refreshing it and constantly improving it. That's where we went to an outsourced solution. And then after that, you've got your basically digital assets. You've got digital asset creation. If you're lucky or if you hire well, you can have somebody with some illustrator type experience on your team already. But it really depends on how deep and how committed you are to creating new content. So that's really our team.
Yeah. How about the financials?
Sure. So on the accounting side, we have the person who does our books is experienced with Seller Central, understands the reconciliation of that. And if you didn't understand the reconciliation of Seller Central, then it's going to be tough because there's so many transactions. There's a lot of invoices going all over the place. It's hard to reconcile. And to some extent, it's almost impossible to reconcile it to zero, but certainly it's helpful that the person who does our book, Shira, she's fantastic and understands, can speak the language.
Do you rely on manual reconciliation of the settlement report, or do you have some kind of automation?
It's semi-manual. We create a download file, and then we run it through kind of a filter that we created through Excel. So it matches up transactions.
Write this down. Check out a website called A2X, A for Apple, number two, X, A2XAccounting.com. This is the gold standard in my book of handling Amazon settlement reports. So basically, if you are using one of the accounting systems that they are integrated with, it's one click. One click, it will fetch your settlement report automatically. With one click, you can review it. There is a setup process, which is easy enough, that will map every single Amazon line item to your GL codes. And if anything new comes up, as you know, something new always comes up in those line items, it will leave that blank and will ask you, pick the one. But with one click, you review it. With another click, invoice goes straight to your account. If you are not integrated with anything, you can take that and then make it an invoice and post it yourself manually. What matters here is it analyzes those hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lines into gross sales, sales tax collected, if any, if applies, promotions, refunds, blah, blah, and then it will give you the total breakdown. It is going to take out, first of all, it's a very unattractive job. I don't care how good somebody is at doing this, they don't like doing it. Because it's every time you have, there's something new, so you have to map it and tweak your Excel. No more Excel work. One click. You download, worst case scenario, you post it manually. If you are integrated, then it's just a couple of clicks and it's done. So I would highly recommend doing this, because you don't know, if you don't fully analyze and post, you don't know what's going on. Yeah. And by the way, the fact that they also hold on to some of your funds sometimes, it creates a balance sheet movements, and it's all included. It will give it all to you. I highly recommend anybody, and A2X, in fact, happens to be a partner of my company, so we work with them, always recommend. And the cost is negligible also. They have obviously a monthly subscription. But I just recommend it because I feel for the people doing the work.
Yeah, no, it's so easy to just say, you know, I'll just accept their numbers and not know how to do it. People don't book their, that's how we were early on. It's like, you just booked, you know, money came in. Okay, just apply it against something. It took us a while before we were able to get past that step.
Listen, there is something else. You may accept their numbers, but you have to declare their numbers as they declare to the IRS and everybody else. Because the other challenge with, if you want to call it a challenge, you can't really hide any online stuff because you are online and the whole world sees you. And if it came down to it, they can subpoena anything and then they can exercise the, and so, you know, all it takes is, you know, to attract the government, you know, it's not big deal, especially when it's hungry already.
Sure.
So, all right, this is great. So let's get into about who you are a little bit. So tell us about, you know, where you're based, start with that, and then take us back to where you grew up and what were some of your interests so that led you to doing this kind of work.
Sure. So I live in, I'm very fortunate. I live in Irvine, California. I've got a wife and two kids, went through K-12 through in the same house. And we were able to really enjoy, you know, I moved here. So that's where I am now. And been here since, you know, almost now half of my life. I was born actually in another country. I was born in Montreal, Canada. So a bilingual city. I trudged through the snow and got to went through college, a degree in economics, and right out of school, got my first job working for a retailer, kind of their company called Future Shop, which is now called Best Buy, which I'm sure you're familiar with. So it was early version. Best Buy was acquired this company, Future Shop. So after about a year on the sales floor, this was at the time when the computer phase was going crazy, and I was selling computers and had to become very proficient at understanding the technology. I have a very curious mind, so it was a good time for me to discover, to enter that space. I've always been a risk taker and also not afraid of making big changes. So it was a Saturday morning. I was going to work. Oops, light went out again. Saturday morning, and I was going to work actually with uncertain, you know, basically Saturday morning, I was going to work to quit, but instead I got promoted and I moved to Vancouver, which is kind of like moving from New York to LA. That's how far that is. So Saturday morning that happened. Monday morning, I'm in Vancouver as the new place where I live, and worked at the corporate office there. I was a buyer and moved up that chain. I did that for a few years until I met the woman who eventually became my wife, and again dropped everything. So about 2 years into that, I moved to California. I figured out how to get a visa. Started working here, and so I like to say I moved to this country with $3,000 in my pocket, and on the first day, true story, I bought a $3,000 car. So then I got back to work, you know, ended up back in Texas where I became a buyer again for CompUSA. They were, you know, the 800-pound gorilla for several years, a great company in their day. And then once the kids were born, decided to come back and move to California so they can be near their family. So cousins, aunts, uncles. I had moved from CompUSA looking to come back to California. I entered the supply chain industry. So there was a company that I was with that was building supply chain solutions for retail products. And I learned a lot about supply chain. And then back in 2011, I was again at a moment where I felt my career needed to go in a new direction. I looked left, I looked right, and I said, no, I'm going to move forward. And I started my first company, Killer Concepts. It was an incredibly interesting and exciting process and story, and I think it would make a great movie someday. You know, we struggled to find a foothold. How do we separate ourselves in the market? And then we invented a few products that caught on, and we saw just huge hockey stick growth. We expanded, had lots of employees, multiple offices, and we're selling in several countries. It was an exciting time. And then the pandemic hit. It was catastrophic for my business. I was very vulnerable at that time. We had been investing for several years on Rocksteady. And also we had a lot of inventory that we thought was sold to brick and mortar retail. Those orders got canceled when the pandemic hit. It was quite devastating. We all of a sudden had to make a decision, and none of them were good. So we shut down that warehouse, said goodbye to a lot of inventory, refocused the company to be an online type company, and split the company into two, like I said. So now we're more focused on direct to customer. And so a different subset of people, different type of environment, but very excited about our future. But it's a challenge. It's exciting, but it has been a challenge.
It always is. So I'm curious about something that you mentioned. So I've always been a risk taker, you said. So where do you think that comes from?
You know, I'm either, I'm a risk taker on certain things. You know, put me at a Vegas table. I like to play some poker. I'm not going to sit down at the high rollers table. I'm not that type of risk taker. I think it's really excitement. I get excited about things that excite me. It really builds my energy. And when I see a path, if I see a vision, if I see a plan and a path forward to get there, I become impatient. I want to get there. And the biggest way to do that is you just got to go. You got to take chance. You got to believe in the vision, and you got to pursue it. And so when I feel I've struggled, I've succeeded enough to know when it's real, and I've failed a few times and survived them to know when my excitement got ahead of me. And then you get to be a certain point where you start to ask the right questions and qualify them some more. But I'm still of the belief you build the right solution. You got the right plan. And then you just want to go. You want to go. And that's when it's time to take risk again. That's when it's time to move your chips to the middle of the table. And there's not so many times in your life that you have those opportunities. And I like to seize them. And I do get excited about that. And especially when you feel that you have a good understanding of what the outcome is going to look like. And that's exciting.
So this vision that you develop and wanting to go after it. So that that's the risk, right? Because it's a complete unknown. So what is it that, because for a lot of people, it could be scary and says, no, don't go anywhere near. So what is the reason that's motivating you to go after it? These are very hard to really put your finger up because it comes naturally to you, right? So you just do it.
No, I would say, look, a wise person told me, and I don't know if it was his quote or not, but everything that's difficult was once easy. And everything that's easy was once hard. Or everything that's difficult becomes easy. And everything that's easy was once hard. Sorry, I butchered that. And the idea is that experience and practice makes perfect. And so early on when I started Rocksteady, or when I started Killer Concepts, our first product was the Rocksteady XS. And, at some point, you design the product, you made the investment to find a factory, you're ready to go to production, and you look at each other, so what do we do now? And I said, I guess we build some, right? I guess we now go spend money and hope that we can turn it into a business. And, maybe that first investment, which was large, was maybe $50,000 to $70,000. And then you grow, eventually, before you know it, you're wiring $300,000-$400,000 at a time to a factory somewhere. And, you hope that you've made the right decisions along the way. You hope you're putting their inventory against a proper forecast. Certainly, we're not going only by feeling. We run, as the company grew, we understood the value of analytics. We understand the value of P&Ls or income statements and balance sheets and understanding historical data, and then driving a forecast and then betting that forecast, how realistic. And then with the business that I'm in, the business that we're in, we don't build to order, we build to forecast. So you have to have the confidence in your forecast to.
But you know how it is. Yeah. I mean, nothing is as simple as that. I mean, those things. So at the end of the day, and you know this very well as an entrepreneur, it all comes down to, you can have all the facts and figures in front of you, and whatever the facts and figures are saying is sure thing. Of course, that's not a decision. That's natural. But it's not always like that. And a lot of the times, it's a judgment call. It's the gut move. So that takes a lot of inner strength and discipline. So what I want to know in your case is, where did you acquire that kind of a strength? What conditioned you to be able to do these things?
Sure. And I think that my career gave me that. So a lot of people don't understand what the job of a buyer is for a retailer. When you become the buyer, you're effectively the CEO of a category of products in those stores. So if you walk up to a store and you see a whole bunch of products, somebody chose those to be in front of you. They're responsible to manage the life cycle of that product, which means to get out of the inventory as that product is getting old, or to refresh it, or when there's new versions, and so on. So the process of going in with your open to buy, which is basically your budget, and getting in front of your inventory planning team and fighting for those dollars you can spend it on this new inventory, that's training. And then ultimately, if I don't make those right decisions, I either get fired or I don't have as much open to buy the next month. So I would say that my experience having been a buyer certainly prepared me. I had been used to signing $1 million purchase orders in the past. It's a lot different when it's your own money and when the mistakes are felt by you. But I guess it built the understanding, at least how to make the right analysis to make sure it's the right decision.
That's great. Well, thank you, Jeff. So share with us your contact information, how people can contact you and reach out.
Sure. So our website is rocksteadyaudio.com, which is a mouthful. So rocksteady, R-O-C-K-S-T-E-A-D-Y, rocksteady, audio, A-U-D-I-O. And I'm Jay Leitman at rocksteadyaudio.com. So J-L-E-I-T-M-A-N at rocksteadyaudio.com. But there's many ways to reach us. You can contact us also through support. We love to hear from everyone.
Yeah, we'll put your contact information on our website, which will get pushed out with the episode, but it's always good to have. So thank you, Jeff. This was great. I enjoyed the conversation, and I'm sure everybody else did too.
I hope so. I enjoyed it too, Nick. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And that brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Be sure and subscribe, rate, and review our show. And be sure and share an episode with a friend. And thank you so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week here on Amazon Legends.